Well, for those of you who are new tonight or didn't come last week, we looked at chapter 1 of Matthew, besides introducing the gospel. And basically what Matthew tells us in chapter 1 is in the very first verse. I'll read it again. It's about Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. So he comes, he's the fulfillment of the promises made to Abraham right back at the beginning, including those that reach out to the whole world, all nations will be blessed in you. And he's the conclusion of the promises made to David, the one through whom God's reign, God's kingdom, will be effected in our world. That's refined a bit in the second scene, which we did last week, when his name is given, which is indicative of who he is, Yeshua, Greek Jesus, Yeshua in the Hebrew, meaning not just Savior, but the one in whom Yahweh saves. So the same God who saved us through Moses is going to save the whole world through this conceived child. And he is the one who is Emmanuel, the one with whom God is really with us, says Matthew to his community. That's who Jesus is. Tonight with chapter 2, he will, which we'll look at in this first session, he will summarize 30, 40 years of reflection, meditation, prayer, preaching, mission activities we saw last week from Paul, all the feedback from the Gentile world. A lot has gone into these powerful chapters, which are really introductory, painting the backdrop before the curtain opens on the gospel. He will now look at, well, what is his mission? What's he for? Who's he going to reach out to? What does God want him to do? So we begin chapter 2, verse 1 to 6. In the time of King Herod, that's Herod the Great, and we can date King Herod now quite accurately. King Herod died in, by our time, 4 BC, which makes our timing a little bit out, doesn't it? Because if Jesus is born 4 BC, we've got big problems. The dating of our present world, 1995, was done in 533 AD. They started this. A monk called Exiguus the Blind. And he, brilliant job he did, tried to bring the whole world history, from the pharaohs to the Roman Empire, with the small amount of available evidence he had, and focus it all on Jesus and make Jesus the real pivot, you know, before Christ, after Christ. And he did a wonderful job. He just happened to miss out by 4 or 5 years, which is remarkable. So in a real sense, Jesus was born 4 or 5 before our era starts, though it's meant to be right on it. Not a problem to anyone, but just to locate him in history. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, there's a Bethlehem up in Galilee too, so he had to say that, Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising, and we've come to pay him homage. When King Herod heard of this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they told him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet. And then he quotes Micah. You, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler Who is to shepherd my people Israel? Last week, in introducing this prologue, I made it clear, I hope, that we're dealing with what's called Midrash, whereby the author finds a text in the Old Testament that picks up what he wants to say, makes it the centerpiece of his portrait, and then weaves a story around it to indicate the truth, not necessarily the biographical truth, but the truth about who this Jesus really is. In this Midrash, Matthew has chosen a statement from the prophet Micah. So to understand the whole passage in front of you, we have to go back, firstly, to the passage itself. See when it was written, see what it meant, get its context, and then come back to our scene. Well, this is Micah chapter 5, verses 2 to 5. Before I read it, we need to know a couple of things that those of you who did the Old Testament can fit in. Micah is a contemporary of Isaiah, the prophet. So Isaiah is living in from 740 to 700 BC. We're in the latter half of the 8th century before Christ. This is the period when Assyria was very powerful and was sweeping. Assyria is where Iraq is now, was sweeping into Syria, present Lebanon, and Palestine. And Isaiah lived at that period in Jerusalem, so did Micah. So it's a time of great disruption. In fact, the Assyrian general, Sargon II, he took the whole of the north. He captured it, including Samaria, the capital, in 721. He swept right down and took the Gaza Strip and the Philistine cities. He swept right through Judea, and 40 Judean towns were burned and ravished and razed to the ground. He didn't happen to capture Jerusalem and neither did his successor Sennacherib, 701, for reasons I won't go into now. So Jerusalem did survive, but alone. And Micah's living through that period when it looked like everything was going to collapse. And he makes this statement to his Jerusalem and Judean contemporaries. O Bethlehem of Ephrathah. And I presume you all know David is born in Bethlehem. So Bethlehem means the house of David. By the way, also accenting the humble origins of David as a shepherd. Before they went to Jerusalem and before the might of Jerusalem took over and before Solomon and all his rubbish stuff and before they got sucked in by the world, as it were, when David was in original kind of innocence as a shepherd and chosen by God. Well, he goes back to that. He says, you, Bethlehem of Ephrathah, who are one of the little clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to rule in Israel. That's the text. But it goes on. Whose origin is of old, from ancient days. Therefore he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has brought forth. The scholars suggest that Micah, being a contemporary of Isaiah, is actually quoting Isaiah practically. He's referring to the very text we looked at last week. A maiden shall bring forth and bear a child, and he shall be called Emmanuel. Micah is alluding to this as well. When she who is in labor has brought forth. And therefore, Matthew, knowing that, is making a link with the very last scene we've looked at. Then the rest of the kindred shall return to the people of Israel, and he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall live secure. For now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be the one of peace. In other words, Micah, reassuring his contemporaries that the kingdom of David will not fall, but will sustain the military might of Assyria. And so you can see as easily as I what Matthew is basically doing. Jesus is the fulfillment of this. He's the one, because the one who is in labor has brought forth just now in Bethlehem, the town of David. So it's again reinforcing the mission of David in Israel. But he goes further. Look back to the beginning of the passage. Wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. These are not Jews. Wise men. What was the east? The east is Babylon. The east is the Persian Gulf area, renowned in the Greek and Jewish world. They were the astrologers. They were the scientists of the day. That's where science started. And the science was basically a science of the stars. They were working out time. They were working out seasons. In that part of the world, they had a solar year, whereas in the simpler world of Palestine, it was a lunar, because everyone can tell the full. But the trouble with 12 lunar months is you keep missing out by about 5 days every year, and your seasons are changing. They'd worked all this out in the East, and they were renowned at that time for their mathematics, the beginnings of it, and their physics, basically from studying the stars. But we're looking a bit deeper than that. Studying the stars, because that's where God is, remember, in the mythology of the ancient world and in ours as well. Studying the stars is studying what God is doing in the heavens, which will tell us about the earth. Thy will be done on earth as in heaven, said Jesus. This is a divine study as they saw it. This is a theology, this astrology, star matter. Well, these wise men from studying the heavens, let's not go into the accident, there could be a whole lot of physical stuff in here and comets and all that, I don't want to go into it, I'm not saying it's irrelevant, but it's basically not central. For we, and these are the Gentiles, wise men coming to Jesus, he's more than the king of the Jews. Matthew's telling us, he's the one who is for the wisdom of the East as well. He is the one for the Gentiles as well. We observed his star in its rising and have come to pay him homage. Isaiah chapter 60. Arise, shine, for your light has come, says the disciples of Isaiah to Jerusalem. Your light has come. The glory of the Lord rises upon you, people of Jerusalem. See, darkness covers the earth, and thick darkness is over all the peoples. But the Lord rises over you, and his glory appears over you. Nations will come to your light. Kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes, look about you. All assemble and come to you, Jerusalem. Your sons shall come from afar, your daughters carried on the arm. Then you will look and be radiant. Your heart will throb and swell with joy, says the prophet. The wealth of the seas will be brought to you, and the riches of the nations will come. Herds of camels will cover your land, young camels of medium and ephah, and all from Sheba will come bearing gold and incense and proclaiming the praise of the Lord. You can see that scene in ours, can't you? I don't have to labour it. That's Isaiah 60, chapter 1 to 6. But note one thing. Verse 3, when King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. Their hearts should have been leaping with joy, says Matthew. Huh? Can you see it? But they weren't. Herod's frightened. The people are, well, he's exaggerating, all Jerusalem wouldn't have had a clue, but he's just saying, basically, he's talking already about rejection. He's talking already about the crucifixion. I mean, that's what's in his mind. Here, the very people who should have been dancing for joy are afraid. And so while all the nations are coming, and that passage I read to you from Isaiah is actually the origin of our image, because all of you think at the Magi, you think they're kings, don't you? We dress them up since we're little kids. Three kings. Bible says nothing about kings in Matthew, but it does in Isaiah. And that's fair enough. So it all gets jumbled up in our little children's imaginations, and so it should be. It's okay. The point of the passage, though, and I won't labour it anymore, is that the Gentile world is coming to do homage while the Jewish world is frightened. And that's the experience of Matthew's community when he's writing his gospel. Basically, the Jewish world have not accepted Jesus, whereas the Gentile world can't believe anything so beautiful could happen to them. A lot of them reject him too, but there's an immense growth in the Gentile world.